Trudy Edmond, and it's my privilege tonight to introduce our program for the next hour, and also our guests who are here in the village. And this will be an hour when we'll have a chance to fill in another chapter in the history of the Howe Sound mining operation here in the Holden area. So it's always a very distinct pleasure that we have as a community when somebody comes back from the Howe Sound mining family to make a visit back to the village. And in this case, it happens to be Jack and Betty Fry. And they're here with me, and I'm not going to take much of your time because we want to hear from them something of their experiences while they lived here in the valley. Jack tells me that he came here in 1947. Now that was 10 years before the closing of the mine. And if you recall, some of you, I mentioned that the other day, just a week ago yesterday, which was the 28th day of June, in 1957, the mine closed. So that was 25 years ago, just last Monday. And Jack lived here from 1947 till the mine actually closed. And while he was here, he met Betty. Betty is sitting next to him. Betty worked in the dining hall, and Jack and Betty became man and wife. So they got married here, and they're celebrating their anniversary, I understand. That'll be tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow, great. So it's a great pleasure to just have a chance to introduce them. I know that they built a home and lived in what was known as Winston Camp, which is the family area that was right down the road here. And they have two children that were born here?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And they're here.
Yes.
So, and one of them I know, they mentioned, is a graduate of the school down here, the eighth grade. So.
No, that's not my daughter, that was my two nieces.
That's the two nieces. All right. Well, before I get things any more muddled up, let me just turn the program over to Jack here and to Betty, and we hope that you'll call on the others of your family and feel free to just chime in and give us some of your experiences and background and things that you think might be of interest to the people here in the community that relate to the operation of the mine and so on. Jack worked in the mine, so he was underground, and he did various kinds of work in the mine, and then he asked to be transferred to outside of the mine so that he worked in the machine shops, and so he's had a wide variety of experience up in connection with the machine shops and with the underground operations of the mine itself. So we'll appreciate anything you can give us in the way of your impressions and experiences up here, and we'll just turn it over to you. I'll try and moderate any questions, but feel free to ask questions directly of Jack or Betty or of their family where that might be appropriate. Okay.
Oh, you go ahead, Jack. He was the breadwinner.
Yeah.
Well, it was a very lovely community up here. We enjoyed it. I think it was the best 10 years of my life. Everybody knew everybody. There's a lot of things that you might not think that we didn't do up here, but we had our rec hall, which you see down here. We had movies about three times a week. We had bowling twice a week. We had teams from the mine. The shop had their own team. The people from the office had the old team.
Can you speak a little louder? They can hear it. It's a little hard to hear under this.
We had people, we got together, there's five couples of us, we were very good friends. We had potlucks, which we enjoyed once a month. We got together, and when you had it at your house, you had the main dish, and the rest of them would bring rolls, salads, and different things that went on with the dinner. Then we had pinochle, what we wanted to play. And in the wintertime, we used to be just like the kids, would get the kids' sleds out and go out sledding. And we have a lot of things that we enjoy. I come here, and Betty came here in 45. She was here 2 years before I ever got here. I got out of the Navy in 46, and I didn't get in here until about 47. I mined in Idaho. And there was a guy that told me that you ought to see Holden. It's a beautiful place. We can save some money, and you know, you're no place to spend your money. Let's put it that way. So, anyway, so I told him, well, that was a good idea, and that's how I found this community, that he has been here before. So when I come up here, Betty worked at the mess hall when I met her. I got here in April of 47. We got married in July, so it was a quick courtship. And it'd be 35 years, so it kind of lasted. We had two children here, and after the mine closed, we went to California, and we had two more. So we got four daughters, and we just brought three of them with us. But my two daughters that was born here when we left here was too small to remember the place. So that's the reason why I'm up here today. It's our anniversary tomorrow, is our 35th anniversary, and I wanted the kids to understand where this family got started, and it was here in Holden. So any questions you want to ask me about the mine or anything, why, be free to say anything.
Okay, I was wondering, what was the relationship like between the salaried and the hourly personnel?
I had friends that was salaried, good friends, pretty good, got along pretty well.
I think it was a very good relationship. Just everybody was just kind of like one happy family, and there was no, you know, division between the two.
Were you union?
Yeah.
What union was that?
It was Mine Mill Smelter Union. Used to be CIO, but they break off and they got the union. I think company and the union got along pretty good, really. I was vice president of the union of this local at one time. And Carl Sprague was the president at the time when I was vice president. And we got along pretty good. Any union and company don't get along when you negotiate, but other than that, we got along good.
The hand back here.
This afternoon you were telling me about you were some of the people that picked up and left and had to leave your home out in Winston. Can you recall the day you made the decision to leave and what kinds of things you thought about and what you took and what you left?
Well, it was pretty sudden when they told us it was closing the mine. When I heard about it, I was high on seniority. I could have stayed here to the last guy. But I had a job offered to me in California. In fact, Curzon used to be here. He was in, Colorado, that I could have got a job. But my wife said, you had enough mining. You know, I was lucky for you to 10 years. I mean, the 8 years I put underground, I put 2 years outside. We should go someplace else. So I got an offer job down in California, so I went to California. We took all our furniture with us, and I don't know, I should have left it. By the time I hauled it all down to California, I could have bought new furniture. But there's a lot of people that did live, just got up and left, you know, had their clothes hanging. And
we were really upset when we heard the news. Because we liked it here, and probably if the mine hadn't closed, we would still be living here today, because this is an ideal place to raise a family. And but when they did say the mine was closing, we just decided if it was going to be, we were going to get out then and not make a long, you know, thing of it. So we just decided and decided where we were going and got a van and had our furniture shipped out and just left. But we really, today coming up here, we have very mixed emotions. It's nice being here, but it's also pretty sad.
Is this the first time you've been back?
No, we were back one time, 3 years after the mine closed.
It's just about
but at that time, the houses were, our homes were still there. And now they're no longer there.
Betty, how did you happen to come up here in the first place?
I moved here with my mother and dad, my family, when I was 17. And I went to work in the mess hall. And
your father was with the company? With
no, my father came up here to work as a machinist in the machine shop. And my brother-in-law was a mining engineer here. And they had moved here, so we kind of just followed them. And I worked over in the mess hall when I was 17 until Al Crowley, who was my boss, found out I was only 17. And then I had to stay off for a while until I had my 18th birthday. And when I came and asked him for a job, he asked me, well, do you want a job or do you want a position? And I said, well, I'm willing to work and do anything. And I did. I waited table and washed pots and pans and dishes and just anything they had for me to do. And I worked there for many years after, even after Jack and I was married and had the two daughters up here. I worked there and also the place downtown that we called the Fountain Lunch then, which is a little, I don't know what you call it now.
Our snack bar.
Your snack bar. Well, I worked there also.
Downtown?
Where were your children born?
Well, two of them were born out in Chelan. I stayed here until time for them to be born, and then Dr. Wam delivered them in Chelan.
And at the time, it cost us $25 per child.
That's true. That was doctor and hospital bill.
Yeah. And the only reason why it cost us $25 is because Wam was $25 more than what the insurance paid.
Did they have a boat that ran away, the thing? You know, not the same boat, obviously, but they had a boat that made a daily run on the lake?
Yes, ma'am. Every
day. When it's time for you to go and deliver your child,
well,
was it? Did it happen to be the time of boat? Did you have a boat down there?
No. You always plan on a week ahead of time. She goes down there and stays in a motel with her mother.
The first time I stayed 2 weeks before my first daughter was born at Campbell Hotel, and then my second daughter, they're here somewhere. I don't know where they are.
Yeah. Raise your hand.
Right here.
There's one.
That's second.
First. Back there.
The third didn't come, and then this is my fourth here. But anyway, then my second daughter, I went on the boat one night, and she was born the next day at noon. So that was pretty close.
But there have been a few babies delivered up here.
There's a question?
When you needed clothing for the children or things for the house, did you have to go into Chelan or Wenatchee?
We had good Sears Roebuck.
Sure.
Montgomery Ward, Spiegel's. These are the dream books that we had. Naturally, we did go out just close to Christmas. I went out to Wenatchee, and we done our Christmas shopping that way.
Sometimes. The other times we ordered it from the catalog.
Yeah, well, I meant
to. I picked it up on a sled down here at the post office and took all the presents home.
So you never felt closed in here?
Pardon?
You never felt closed in?
Oh, no. I never did, huh? We used to, once a year, we would take 28 days vacation and go just spend the whole time. We called it the outside world. And we'd go to Canada or just wherever we chose for that 28 days vacation.
In other words, we save our money all year long and went first class.
28 days.
Any question?
What was your school system like?
But up to the 8th grade. And that's it right there, that's in front of the fountain, in front of the club.
Were there a lot of children here?
Yes,
quite a few.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, quite a few children.
We had
two teachers.
Yeah, 500 families up in the campsite where we live. plus the children here in the
no,
circle?
No, 500. There was 100 and some houses.
Oh, I thought we had 500.
No, there was 500.
Did you build your own house?
No, all the miners did build their house. We bought it from a person that was moving out. That's how they exchanged.
But you actually owned the house?
Yes, you had to buy the house.
And you just had to leave it then? Yeah.
Sold it.
Just walk out and live it. Who are you going to sell it to?
My company. Didn't the company buy it back from
you?
No. Oh, for God.
Because there was nothing here. It was going to be a ghost town. Tell them how we had to have a big long list of names before you were even eligible to buy a house.
Oh, yeah, when he was up here, it's a long list to buy a house because they didn't have enough houses. We call us the homesteaders. All these drift miners, they lived up in the dormitories. And the people wanted to stay here, they're homesteaders. And then if you wanted a house like I got married, I had to put my name on the list. When somebody moved out, then I got a chance to buy that house. And the last house we bought was an expensive house because it cost us
$3,000. $3,000.
Yeah.
That was it.
But at them days, you got to figure, I was making top money in the shaft, and I was making about $12 a day.
Mm-hmm. So, How big was the house, or how many rooms?
They were very nice houses. Ours was sufficient for us. We had two bedrooms and
about 1,600 square foot. Pretty good.
Pretty
size,
nice.
So.
Dad, I was going to say, Mom said that she went to work the mess hall at 4:30 or something in the morning. What time did you start work? What was an average day hourly for you guys?
I went underground 7:30 to 3:30.
And made $12 a day.
$12 a day.
Well, when we started, it was $8.
$8,
mm-hmm.
And it went up to $12.
Well, I worked in a shaft. I got $12. Miners was making $2 less. They was making $10.
I see.
A mucker would make $8. So they had different...
You mentioned the Fountain Lunch was downtown. Were there other stores downtown?
Well, we did where your laundromat is now. This Helen Bell had a clothing store in there.
A little dress shop.
Yeah, a little dress shop for men and women. We had a few things in there. But that wasn't until the later years that we were here. At first we had nothing like that.
The mess hall is called the hotel. Did the people come up and...
The hotel was above the mess hall.
And they rented those out?
Well, that's for people that come in here for visiting. And they call that the hotel. And then the next dorm over here, it was the grocery store. Next door, and they had a big grocery store.
But we didn't always have the grocery store either.
No,
we had to have our groceries shipped in on the barge. Once a week, the groceries would come in.
I think it'd be interesting if you told them the money system that operated up here.
House Sound Mining Company had their own money. They made it out of tin. And it said on it, House Sound Mining Company, and it was a 50-cent piece. A lot of these miners, they can't live from payday to payday, so they have to have money in between. So the company, you go over to the store and you draw this tin, $5 at a time off of your check. And that's what they use for money up here. They gamble with it, they bought groceries, stamps. Even in some places in Chelan, they would take the tin because they know the company was good for it.
Why aren't there any of those left around here? We've looked and looked.
Yeah, I told him I was sending one when I go home. I
have
one.
We're going to have it in the museum.
Oh, good. But they weren't worth anything when anyone left. You thought that they...
No, they was worth
it.
But the company would cash it in before you left.
But I mean, at the end, you thought they'd been all over the place here.
No, the company bought it back. Because
they
had to make it good.
I mean, what would they do with a worthless tin coin?
I guess they throw it away, yeah.
Yeah, worthless. I wonder where they went.
But they printed it, they had to make it good, see. So what they done with it, I don't know.
I see a hand back here.
Was the grocery store a company store or a private enterprise?
Private.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
It's private, privately owned. It was
Price
in Chelan that owned it.
Were the prices fair?
Yes.
I would say so.
Yeah.
Could you tell us about the newspaper that you had here?
Yeah, Holden had a newspaper.
We had one of those too, the little newspaper.
A weekly scandal, or whatever you want to call it. It was a very nice paper. It was just typed. Of course, we had the paper come in from Chelan. We had the PI here, and the Chelan paper is about all we get up here. We didn't have no TV up here till 50, I don't know, about 55, somewhere around there.
There?
Yeah, so we didn't even know what TV was. They brought it up here and showed it us up at the dump site up here and all this snow, and everybody said, boy, did you see that, you know.
I was so excited. You could hardly see the picture. It looked like it was snowing.
But then we got TV, but we had to have pretty high antennas to even pick up a couple of stations.
All right, there's a question back here.
What was a work day like when you were in the mine and when you were in the shop? How did it go?
The difference from working in the mine?
Just what happened? What did you do?
Well, working underground, by the time when you get on the train and by the time you come out is 8 hours. Company paid for your lunch break. Outside, you work a half hour extra because you eat on your own time. That's the only difference underground and outside. Reason why I wanted to come outside is to learn something. I done all the mining. I know everything about mining. But I wanted to be a welder. I want to do a little, run the lathe. I do a little mechanical work, in which I'm glad I did work the last 2 years out here because it did help me in life when I left here.
Okay, I have another question.
How far back in did the mine go? How far up and how far down did it go? And what did you use for safety factors in mine?
Well, mine, when I come here, the upper levels is already mined out. So we started at the 1500 level. That's what you see up there where you can see that portal where the water's running out now. That was the 1500 level. And we went down to 2675, I think as was the bottom. And then we had different levels, 1600, 1700, and then it didn't have, then it had a 1900, no 18, then a 2100, 2175, I guess, and then 2300, and the bottom was 2675. Had a 2500 level, and this is where they mined up. And it's pretty close to a mile going in where the shaft is. And we had a hoist room in there. Two big hoists, one for the ore and one for the man cage. And they're a double compartment where they hoist the ore. And the man cage was by itself.
Was the work dangerous?
Huh?
Was the work dangerous?
No, we fought pretty good for safety. This pretty safe mine. Sure, there's a few guys got killed, but it's just like any place else, you know. One thing the union didn't believe in was, the union didn't believe in JIPO. If you guys know what JIPO is, it's a contract. Guys contract that they go in there to get callous. You know, they want to get the footage off. You know, they don't bar down a timber, and that's the way to get hurt. But contracting, they make more money, so much a foot instead of day's pay. And that's how a lot of them did get hurt.
I was wondering about the water problem, because there's much water now. Has there always been a problem? Did they have to pump the water out of there?
Always had pumps in the bottom of the shaft, right. At one time here, the mine flooded. In fact, I was here at the movies, and I worked in a shaft, and they come and got me out of the movies. I had to go up there and was on swing ship, and I had to get in there and get all the men out. And what had happened is this big glory hose that they had mined out, where they bulkheaded across, cemented. And then they pump these tailings back from outside, they pump it back in there. And naturally the bulkhead had busted, but they only had about, quote me, but I mean the hole wasn't too big, maybe about six inch hole that had broke loose and all this tailings had come out. If the whole bulkhead had come at one time, it had killed everybody in there that was below the 1500. But it didn't, it was just about an 8 inch hole. And went in slowly and got time to get everybody out so nobody was hurt. But it did come up clear up to 2300. It buried everything down below. And, you know, over the period of time. And then it took the company a long time. I guess it took about 6 months or so to get all that mucked out again and get back into operation.
Am I correct in what I've learned is that accident cost the company something in the order of $250,000 to clean it up.
Yeah.
And in that year, I think it was 1951, they didn't pay a dividend. Yeah. I think it was the only year that the company didn't pay a dividend to their stockholders. Right. Is that correct?
Sure.
Could you tell the story behind Honeymoon Heights?
Well, Honeymoon Heights is... the place, they kind of closed it when I come here in 42nd. I mean, they were still operating. Honeymoon Heights, they had people that lived up there. But it was a problem, kind of the slides and whatnot. So they abandoned it and moved them down below. But they had all kind of stories about Honeymoon Heights. I don't want to get into that.
All right, another question.
I have a church here.
Yes, we. They used to come up here about once a month, and some of them sometimes they come once a week, don't they, Betty?
Well, we had the house we had a little apartment upstairs, and we rented it to a young man, a young preacher, and his wife, and they held services down there,
yes.
Right in the rec hall where you had it tonight.
And then the Catholics had a priest that came up, mm-hmm. And I think he came once a month.
Yeah, the yeah. Catholic priest did.
Oh yeah, Dad. I was just going to ask you to tell me about when there was a cave-in or something down in the mine. What procedure they took? You know, when everybody, you know, what happened?
When there was a cave-in, 9 bells is an emergency bell, and that's where the cage would go. I mean, you know, underground, right there. I mean, that's where the problem was. Of course, we had people on safety committees. I was on a safety committee. And you went back there and you take care of the situation and get them out as fast as you can, you know. They blow the whistle here, of course, the woman gets scared and who's got hurt and whatnot. So it was quite an activity.
Was there either a doctor in the hospital?
Well, there was a doctor. Some people say there wasn't a doctor, you know, like any of them. But, all was required up here, really, was a good first aid man. But they did have a doctor here. They say there was a doctor.
Yeah.
But everybody went out. They didn't go to him. I mean, they had to have him if they got hurt, but if, you know, otherwise they wouldn't go to him. They went out to the doctor.
Was it true that they had a priest underground?
A priest?
Yeah, working underground.
Oh, I don't know. They had... I never knew one of them, an ordained priest. There are a lot of guys claim they was.
Okay, there's a hand.
I just wondered how you got around in the winter. If you could explain a little bit what the winter was like.
Well, the winter, they have to keep these roads open, Connaughey Hall, or all winter. They had a snow go. Of course, the campsite, they couldn't use the snow go because they break out the windows. So they use a bulldozer to clean up our roads. Up and down these roads here, they use the snow go going up and down. But sometimes they couldn't use the snow go, kind of you have slides and whatnot, you got trees across the road, rocks. So they use the bulldozer to clean out the area where the slide is. And the rest of the way, they use the snowmobile, you know, where they throw the snow off the road. And they kept the roads open all winter, yeah. And of course at home, you've done your own shoveling. The path that went into your house, you shovel it out in the road, let the company take care of it out in the road. And so everything was open all the time. You didn't have no automobiles up here. We couldn't have any automobiles, just a company automobile. Kind of you couldn't park it nowhere. The snowplow had to go through, you know. And like the dorms here, they had men that cleaned around there, but all you had little trails that going by. And I mean, the snow would get pretty deep here. Of course, you know by now how deep it gets. But all you have is little trails that you follow, go to one dorm to the other. But it's pretty well open in the wintertime. The company keep it pretty open.
Well, where did you keep the cars?
We sent them out and have them in storage. In Chelan.
Chelan.
Yeah. Company brought them in and out. Didn't cost us nothing.
Were there always so many deer here, and were they so tame as they are now?
Well, everybody was hunters up here, so you didn't have much deer up here. They didn't come around like they used to. Down in Lucerne, yeah. In the wintertime, they get hungry, they do come out around the cabins.
Have you seen them around here?
Yeah, they're pretty friendly.
Yeah. Here's a question.
Was there any problems with animals ever?
Problems with animals?
No, we didn't have any problems. We did have a problem with a bear one time. Used to come out of a dump site, and then we wouldn't let the garbage man dump the garbage, so we had to shoot him. So that's the only problem we had with that.
That Lake Chelan, did that freeze over in the wintertime, or was
no?
It never froze. It still doesn't.
No. And I think you can tell me, you don't know much as I do, but I think it's about 3 degrees from summer to winter.
Yeah. It varies very little because the water is so deep, it keeps turning over all winter long. Back here.
Did you ever have problems with avalanches? Is there a big avalanche valley here?
We have a lot of slides, like we call it snow slides, but it's the same as avalanche. Yeah, down at the road here, yeah, they bring trees and everything else across the road.
Never got any buildings down there?
Up here has never bothered us, no.
One man was killed.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Walking from the mine one night. He just got off shift on the swing shift and was walking down to the campsite, and a slide came and buried him. And the mine closed and looked for him for, I think, a couple of days, wasn't it, Jack? Finally, a little dog dug in the area, and that's where, how they knew where he was. And then also on the road, the buses that transport the men back and forth from Lucerne up here. A lot of people lived at Lucerne, and my father, for one, was in a bus that a snow slide came down, and they stopped, and the snow came right into the door, pushed the bus door open. And while they were sitting there, another one came down behind them. So they were caught between two snow slides that night, and that happened not two snow slides, but many times there were slides, and the men didn't even get home at night.
How big was Lucerne at this time?
Big, pretty big. They had quite a few. Excuse me, quite a few.
What's that?
Question of how big was Lucerne during
Lucerne?
The time of the mining operation?
Lucerne had, in fact, that's where we lived when we first got married. Betty and I had a cabin down there at Lucerne. Rinslow's owned it at the time. And they had a post office at Lucerne. They had a little store down there. They had a little tavern, a beer tavern. And they must have, I don't know, 10, 15 cabins.
Lots of cabins.
On one side, and then the other side, Oscar Giddy, over the other half. That was, he owned that. And this part that we lived in, it was from the Forest Service, which owned it. But Giddy had, actually had a deed to his property.
Yeah.
And that's where people used to live, waiting to get to move up here. And they rented from down there, and that was privately owned, and the company didn't have nothing to do with it.
Yeah. Question for Betty. Working in the dining hall there, what meals, what type of meals were served? Who were they served to? Did the homesteaders eat there? Did the mining company pay for those meals?
The men themselves paid for their own meals. It was taken out of their paychecks. And I watched the girls serve over there today, and I'll tell you, they've got it pretty easy compared to the way we did. When that place was full of miners, you have no idea how they eat. And each of us had about 8 tables that we were responsible for. And they served, well, you can imagine how miners would eat. 2 meats, 2 vegetables, 2 different kinds of pie, 2 different cakes, and just that table was loaded. And the minute they walked in, and they came in like a herd of cattle, sit down, and all you'd hear was clanking of dishes, and at that time they passed all the empties on the end of the table, and you'd look at 8 tables, and all the dishes were empty in just a very few minutes, so you'd have to start going back and getting refills for them. And boy, they expected to be served promptly, let me tell you. And they served 3 breakfasts. I had to start work at 5 o'clock in the morning. And we served breakfast. We served breakfast at 8 o'clock and again at noon, plus lunch at noon. And then the men came in to pack lunches at like 2 in the afternoon, and then dinner at, I guess it was around 6 o'clock. So our work day was from 5 in the morning till 6:30, 7 o'clock at night when you finished cleaning the tables.
Yeah. What you had to split in between.
Yeah, that was good shift.
What kind of wage would you get for that?
Well, I remember getting $8 and something a day, and that was for a split shift. I walked that road 3 times a day, up and down, home.
Okay, was there another question I heard?
Well, I asked about tips. Did you get any tips?
No, sure didn't. No tips.
No tips.
Now, the homesteaders stayed at home, right?
The homesteaders cooked the oatmeal.
They could occasionally if they wanted to, but they had to let the man in charge know that they were bringing their family in for dinner.
Do you recognize the silverware and the cups and the chairs and stuff?
The chairs look the same, and the tables look the same, except they look like they've been covered with something.
Yeah.
They wasn't colored. But the dishes were those big, thick, heavy, just white dishes with the green rims on them. Pots and pans about this big to wash, and we had our own bakery there. They baked for the men.
Somebody today asked me if they used all them coffee urinals that you see them in
they
there.
Did.
They use every bit of them.
Mm-hmm. Were the men assigned places?
No, but they had to come in and fill up the tables just
as they
like
come
they
in, they had
right
to fill
now
up the tables. They couldn't skip around, they follow in line.
Is your family style then?
Yes.
Family.
Jack, who lived in the chalets up there? What type of personnel would you find living in those places?
Mine and engineers. The first one down here that you see the garage in, that was superintendent. No, not the mine superintendent. General manager.
General manager.
And then you've got your mine superintendent, you've got your mine foreman, your engineers, and then that house in the middle there, that's the one that guys that works in the office and whatnot, they had their room, the signal men.
Right.
And then a lot of your engineers and stuff
mm-hmm.
worked there.
Yeah.
And then all your mine shifters, most of them lived up where we did.
I think it'd be interesting for all of us to learn about your home, more about that, and the fact that the whole family was up there visiting the site this afternoon. You might tell them what you found.
Oh yeah, we were surprised. Long time ago, we had these clotheslines, you know, that you put up, and you cement them in. It's welded a pipe, you know, and then you got your thing so put in for your clothes. And today we was up there. Well, mine wasn't that, but I had made a swing set for the kids, and I had a big cement thing there, and I put my pipes in there, and I wrote the kid's name on it. And today, when we walked up there, it was turned over with our kid's name on it today. So yeah.
Two names looking right at
yeah,
us.
Yeah, looking right at us when we got up there.
Couldn't believe it. And some of the irises that I planted
yeah
in the back were there.
Yeah.
It was really neat.
You might tell them where
yes,
that
I'd
is.
I'd like
too
to.
Yeah.
Too big.
It was up on the upper level.
Mm-hmm.
If
there's
you go up
one
to the village, up there where it was, I think it was in the last row,
mm-hmm,
up the upper
yeah
level.
On the left row.
And
yeah
kind of in the middle?
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm, there's kind of a part of the brick wall still
yeah
there.
Yeah, the brick wall
and
is still there,
steps
and then cement
there
steps.
Mm-hmm.
But the two things that pushed down looked like they used a bulldozer to burn it down
they
a couple
did
of houses.
Moved them down,
yeah. And it said Linda and Lana there. So
Linda and Lana.
Me out.
And they're both here.
They're
yeah
both here.
What happened? Did they destroy? Did they burn? Or?
No, they had a restore back to
the forestry people burned them down and bulldozed them out so that the forest could come back. The problem was that the roofs had all caved in for the most part, and I suppose that had happened to your home as well.
Yeah.
Not when we were up here.
Not
we had
no,
a pretty steep.
Not yet.
You had a
the
good
newer room. Ones that they built.
I see. Uh-huh. I know a lot of them.
Yeah. A lot of them did
were
cave
wrecked
in.
By the snow.
Somebody said you had a ski tow or something up there too.
We
ski?
Did, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ski tow?
That was at the far end of the housing.
At the far end.
Remnants, right?
And up the road here, we had a ballpark. We had teams. We played ball, softball, fast pitch. That's what we enjoyed.
Who kept the law and order up here when the miners got rowdy or whatever? I mean, did you have any problem with anybody really getting out of hand, or did the company
well,
take care of that?
We sort of had a company man that acted as a deputy, you know, but...
He had problems. A pretty rowdy bunch, I'll tell you. Nothing like this.
It wasn't that bad. Few arguments, you know, but they fight one day, and the next day they had their arms around one another and wondered what they was fighting about. It wasn't too much.
So they didn't have any real problems? I'm sorry. So they never had any real problems with any?
No, we had a big robbery up here one time. Maybe you heard about
it. No, I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah, well, some guy broke in the rec hall and stole a lot of that tin money that you turned But they caught him.
Other than that, we didn't ever have any crime of any kind. Everybody just...
But that's but the biggest crime that we had up here that I
really
can think of.
Question here.
On an average day, how many men would be working in the mine?
We had three shifts. We worked around the clock, 6 days a week. Sunday's the only day we had off. And on each shift, that's been 25 years ago. It's kind of hard for me to remember, you know, how many was on a shift. I can tell you
offhand. The figure I've heard is around 400 that worked either in the mill or inside in the mine. So they were... There were about 400 that worked across the creek over on the upper slope. And that could be in the machine shop
that's
as well.
That's about all.
That sounds
reasonable?
Yeah,
I thought maybe pretty close to 5.
Maybe.
But that's everybody.
Okay.
When
that'd
you talk
be
about
everybody.
500, it's everybody.
Yeah, okay.
That's about making the...
And then the support personnel on this side would, and children and so on, would bring the community up to 800, 900?
Yeah, about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how many in Lucerne? A couple hundred down there?
Lucerne wasn't that big. I don't know. My niece can probably answer that more than I can.
Could you answer that?
Sharon?
Or Sue?
How many down at Lucerne?
How much do you think?
Probably 100.
Probably
yeah.
100 would be the bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
100, 150, I don't think there'd be over.
Were the hiking trails over?
The hiking trails?
Yeah, like there, huh?
Yeah, we always had trails. We had to go someplace to get out fish, like Heart Lake.
Yeah.
We always had a trail up that way. Dumpy Lake.
Holden,
Holden. It's all open, always kept open. Miners always used them. We used that on our Sundays, though, whenever we went fishing.
When you were talking about leaving, that's really interesting because we hear so many stories. And you said that it was really sudden. What did you mean by that in terms of days?
We had no idea that the mine was going to shut down. In fact, we just wallpapered our house and fixed it up pretty nice. You know, figure on staying here a few more years. So all of a sudden they said they were shutting the mine down.
Like right now or tomorrow? Or?
No, they didn't just shut it today.
But it wasn't a great length of time.
No, they just gave us notice that they was going to start stop production and start cleaning up the mine.
Well, we hear stories about people being told so quickly that they had to get out on the boat
no,
and
no,
food
no.
on the table.
No, that's not true.
Well, that's a good story. Yeah, that's one thing. I'm glad to get that information because I've been told by others that it was really very, very sudden. People left.
It was sudden to us, but they gave you enough time to get ready to get out.
Maybe.
Yeah, by enough time, would you say what? A couple of weeks?
Oh, no. We know that.
Wasn't it like at least a couple of months?
Oh, yeah,
if you wanted to stay that long. Some people did, just, you know, decide like...
And they kept, man, the highest on the seniority stayed here. They start, had to start laying off. But the ones higher in the seniority helped kind of clean up everything to get ready to get out of here. Right. You know? So they had 3 months to get out. I mean, we, the ones that got up and said, well, you know, if they're going to close, I'm leaving. So I had plenty of time to pack all my stuff. The company hauled it all out for me, and I put it in a van, you know, and left. And there was still people there. Huh?
How about another ore body? There was talk about ore and what, over Martin Ridge or somehow that ore body was supposed to go off into another
The direction of Buckskin.
Oh, they was working on it, but it's got too costly, you know, working underground. I mean, it is costly. Now they go open pit and, you know, they move the whole mine. But it did get pretty costly here to operate.
Well, another place I read too that they knew that it was going to take about 20 years to get the ore out of there. Is that true?
Well, they had a lot of talk that that the mine could go on for a while. Yeah. But you can buy, this is the story, you can buy copper from South America cheaper than you can mine it here, see? So why operate something costly?
Yeah.
Have you ever had reunions?
I came to two of them since I left here, but they have it, they usually have it every year. They have it down at the head of the lake, down in Chelan. And I hear that they have it one next month, in August, the 25th reunion, you know, 25 years since the mine been closed. But I won't make it because I'm pretty well tied up.
Where do you live now?
I live between Medford and Ashland. In Oregon. It's a little town by the name of Talon. And it's nice and peaceful there. I hope it stays that way.
Question?
Yes. Yep. How about the facilities and the arrangements in the houses? Now, for example, your heating or plumbing. Now, did you have like septic tanks or was there a sewage system developed for the different houses? How does that work?
It's very modern, our homes was. We had running water. We had oil heat. People could go out and put a wood stove in, and they had all the wood you can get. You know, our Forest Service was $1 a tree that you give them for stumpage. And they marked trees down here that they wanted thinned out that you could go cut your wood. But like me, I had a job for one time here. I worked for 3 years for 7 days a week, you know, and I didn't have the time to cut wood. So I burnt oil. That's what I heat with, and oil was about, I don't know, I'd say 6 cents a gallon, something like that at that time. Our gas must have been about 11 cents, I think, a gallon.
Yeah, that's what it says on the pump.
Yeah.
We took a picture of that today.
Yeah. But anyway, the fuel oil was about 6 cents, something like that, a gallon. And
so we had washers and dryers.
We had washers, dryers, freezers, everything that modern, electric stove, plumbing in the house, good water. I mean, in fact, the water is very good. I mean, I couldn't get used to when I left here, the water on the outside. But the water, all it is snow water that we get up on the hill. There's no minerals in it. I mean, there's no minerals, just like drinking rainwater. So we had to give the kids calcium for their teeth. Because it was really bad on their teeth. But the water didn't taste any better than, I mean, it really tastes good.
Yes?
How many trucks did they have to mine or to take the ore out to the dock?
There's two trucks going up and down the road.
Two?
Yeah.
They were carrying?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how many.
They carried three or four buckets on there. Yeah.
Three.
I was never with transportation, but I'm sure there's about two trucks that run all day long. Mm-hmm. They had, I think, three or four, but two that went up and down.
I see. Okay. Any more questions?
And it all went to Tacoma, done the smelting. So everything was milled here and then taken down here, and they barged out. A tugboat took it out in the barges, and they went to Tacoma to the smelter.
I have a question. About the cage in the mine. What was that all about?
The cage is what the man rides up and down, down the shaft. We haul everything down there. We haul the man cars to the different levels. Whatever you want to haul, it was in the cage. The cage took it down. They call it a cage because it looked like a cage, you know.
What type of ventilation did you have down there?
There's good ventilation. We had up in the hill there. That's one thing, you don't hear it now, but they had a big fan there that blew in the mine all the time. And you went through a drift that went through the mine, especially when you blast and whatnot, it sucks it up.
I've been told by others that that was one of the most noticeable things in the valley here,
yeah.
Was the noise from that
fan. You can
hear
it. When it goes off, then you couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
Something's wrong.
You knew something was wrong when
knew
the fan went off.
Yeah.
You still can go up to the ventilation shaft now
and
feel that draft coming in.
Yeah, it still does.
Okay. More hand. Here's another stuff.
Was there ever any was there a lot of injuries that were made?
There's a few. It's quite a few that hurt you.
So, like broken bones?
Yeah, lots of them.
But the company basically had a good safety record.
Very good, very good. Yeah, good safety record. Yeah, you had safety committees
mm-hmm.
that checked over anything it wasn't safe, didn't work in there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they worked pretty well with them. Yeah, but you still get hurt. There was a lot of accidents. Like I say, it was an accident, a callousness.
Yeah.
Did the high school kids go to school every day from here, or did they have to stay down?
No, they had to go outside to go to high school.
They boarded
live
out.
Outside, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You had to board them out.
In Chelan?
In Chelan. In fact, I got a niece here that graduated from here, and then she had to go outside and go to high school.
Two of our nieces. We're here on a family reunion also.
Yeah.
We have a niece here from Phoenix, Arizona, one from over Yakima way, and the two girls graduate from the 8th grade here and then went to Chelan and finished high school, or went to high school out there.
Did you come back on the weekends?
No, I don't think they got home that often.
Did you have a cemetery here?
No.
No.
No cemetery.
Everybody's sent out.
Is there gold in the tailings?
Huh?
There's gold in the tailings.
At one time, Howe Sound Mining Company paid all of the expenses in gold, and the copper and the zinc was all profit. But we couldn't see it, otherwise I would be rich. No, they took it out in the smelter. That's where they recovered the gold. You couldn't see it in the rock.
It sounds to me like the company is a very good company to work for. Sounds like you had a good experience. Is in terms of your knowing what else goes on around the country, other mining operations, is this a unique setting and a unique mining operation?
I loved it. That's why I was here for 10 years.
I think
nothing
it
like
is.
This anywhere else.
No.
I don't think so. Nothing quite this nice.
No. Company and management and labor got along pretty good here, really, I thought.
I guess you have to, living in so far.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The company still exists today?
I think they have holdings in South America. Their company is from New York, Howe Sound Mining Company is out of New York, and I think they still got holdings in Mexico. That's all I know.
Yeah, they have an interest in the aluminum.
Aluminum, that's right,
yeah,
up here.
Up in Bellingham, isn't it?
Somewhere up
there. Yeah. So they still have interest, but this was their last venture in mining copper. They didn't ever go back into the common metals after they closed this mine. They went into the precious metals, pharmaceutical metals, and various kinds of things, and continued to operate in that way. And if you ride a jet airplane today, it's quite probable that the Howe Sound residual company had something to do with the fins that are in those fans, the motors, turbines. And they specialized in very very selected kinds of expensive metal and got out of the copper business. It's a more or less of a holding company now. You can't buy stock in it. You could buy stock in it originally, and they called the stock in just a few years ago. Yeah.
When was the mine shaft filled in or partially filled in? The main entrance is at 1,500 feet, and the lowest one was 2,350. Okay,
yeah.
Now, does it mean now, since water is coming out of the main channel, that everything from then all the way down below is filled up with debris and water?
No, we don't know that that's true. We've been back in the mine in the 60s, and at that time the water was not up to the level of the 1,500-foot portal in tunnel. There was still open space below, but today we don't know how full it is. We don't know how much, when you get a head of pressure, then it leaks out, and it could very well be leaking into Railroad Creek, because you see that level is quite a bit above Railroad Creek. But we don't know is the answer.
Does it feel odd to you to have Holden Village be here now as it is in comparison to what you see?
I'm glad it is here.
I have a good feeling about it too. Yeah. It's nice to see something worthwhile being done with it.
Yeah. Instead of being wiped out, I'd have felt bad about that. This is beautiful.
Was it always named Holden?
Holden.
Yeah, well, it was named after the guy prospected it, got started this mine up here.
Was the net operation a profitable one? Did they make money over the long run, or did they wind up?
I don't know. I wasn't at dead end, but they must have. Otherwise, you know, they'd have closed it a long time ago. But I wasn't in the financial part of it. I don't know.
I think the best evidence of that is that they paid dividends right up to the end of the operation, so they were making money.
Okay, it was interesting to learn by listening to some of the tapes that they have for visitors to listen to. Interesting to hear of the camaraderie and the fellowship and the closeness developed between you and the other miners. Like, we're told that you knew your fellow workers as good as you did your brother.
That's true. You had to be close. I mean, to work together, you know, that close. And over here, to me, it was just like one big happy family. Everybody knew everybody. In fact, sometimes they knew too much. They know everything.
Okay, hand back there.
When you say the 300 level or 1500 level, what's that measured from? Where is zero?
Top mountain comes down this way.
From the top of the mountain.
Yeah.
Well, the top of the ore body.
Yeah.
Top of the ore body. Not the top of the mountain, but the top
place
where the ore existed.
When
so zero is the upper level, or the very top of the ore body. And 2,675 feet would be that far from the top of the ore body to the bottom of the ore body where
they
were working.
Yeah.
Now, we were told, too, that there's still ore broken off at the lowermost levels at the time the mine closed, which is still there. And they had also cored ahead and had similar kinds of ore below where they were operating. The only problem was they couldn't make money at the price of copper and lifting it as high as they were. Is that your impression, too?
That's what we were told.
Yeah.
They stopped. They didn't finish. All they said was too costly. They couldn't operate.
You might tell us a little about the operation within the mine in terms of the dynamiting and the system they used to break up the ore and get it out.
Well, excuse me. When they mine a drift, they drift in. And that's kind of hard to explain. You drift in, and here's the ore here, okay? So they drive a drift here. And then they put raises up this way. And then they bring another drift across this way, and then they
start putting long holes, then they break everything into this drip and down to this level here. And then that's how they haul in the ore cars, that they take it up. And then they had the main shaft. Everything's hauled to this main shaft and dumped, and the hoist brings it up. And they bring it out at the 1500 level. But eventually, as they break in this with these long holes that they drill and keep breaking it in, next thing you know, you just got a great big glory hole to get all this caved in. See? And then they go from there, they go the next level, and they do the same thing. And that's the object of putting in that tailings in there to fill the space up in it. You know, but they hadn't really mined out. But this is how they run a level, and then they start putting raises off of the level into the ore. And then they break it, and then shoots that comes down. And they have cars that transit out to the main shaft. The main shaft do all the hauling of the ore that comes up.
Does it mean you have a tremendous huge cavern there?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. In different levels. It's some, you can't even see across there.
No.
It's all mined out.
Judging by all the material that's laying out in here, that has to be a huge cavern.
That's right.
Oh yeah, but there's a lot of them was taken and pumped back in there too.
Yeah.
So you can imagine how
how
much they had taken out of there. Of course, I can do better if I had a pencil and paper to draw it and explain to you. But if you talk about it, I get a little confused. But everything was hauled to the main shaft. The main shaft hauled all of the ore out of there. And it was all hauled out in the 1500 level to the
main. How did you get the electricity now? Did you have a line coming up the...
electricity is going right in there, yeah, right to the main shaft. It was right along there. 2300 volts, I think it is, that goes under there. And this mine, you didn't have to worry about it. It's not gas, it's like you're having a coal mine. So you didn't have to worry too much about explosions and stuff.
Yeah.
So they had electric lines and everything in there.
They came up the railroad track from Lake Chelan?
Oh, no, the power lines that came up here, yeah, they came up. They come all along there and across the lake. And they came clear from Chelan.
Did they have power shovels down here to pick up the minerals?
No, there was no shovels underground. They call them mucking machines, and it was all operated off of air. They had big compressors that run most of all our equipment underground. It was all air, mostly air. But they had electrical locomotives on the main levels and a few of the other levels. But the levels that didn't have any electricity on it, they had trammers. They call them trammers, and they're battery operated. And their little locomotives that haul the cars back and forth the ore.
So how did they load the cars?
What they call it, a mucking machine. And it's an air operating thing that they scoop it up.
Oh.
And that's what they call a mucking machine. That goes into drifts. And then the ores are all, they work it so they come into chutes and then they dump it into the cars. They blast it right into these chutes. Then they have slusher drifts that slushes it into these chutes that goes into the cars. So they got their method of doing it without having any shovels or anything in there.
Somebody asked a question, what is a drift?
A drift is like a shaft, like going in there as a tunnel, you know? That's a drift. Drift goes this way. And
well, we appreciate your coming and your willingness to share with us. I think we don't want to impose on you any longer. You've been very generous with your answers and time and so on, and we're very happy to have you here and all your family, and we hope that you'll come back again.